Welcome to a new episode of Liftoff, a Jets football podcast with your host, Chris, and from playlikeajet.com, Mr. Sharman Phillip. And you could follow us on Twitter at Liftoff Jets. You could follow Sharman at GrownFolk1980. You could follow myself at CP7NY. You could also find us wherever you find your podcast, at Spotify, Apple, Google, and Amazon, and all those places. And you could also find us at SportsWire Radio, at sportsanarium.com/player. You can follow the station manager there, Thomas Bryce, at Thomas Bryce 2017, for all the scheduling of all the other great shows. So, Sharman, we're inching closer to camp. We're getting there, right?
We're almost there. Yeah. I mean, the craziest thing about this is the incredible level of excitement that we're feeling kind of makes it feel so far away. You know what I mean? Because right. We want everything to happen now. I think it's an important time for the players. I think Salah called it the me time or the me version of camp or something like that, he said. I can't remember exactly what the quote was, but it was something sounding or to the effect of, this is on you now. We're not going to be here to watch you. We're not going to be here to schedule your treatments and your recovery and your training and your time spent in your playbook. And it's on you to perform as high as you did whilst you was with us here. Go home, get some time to relax, spend time with your family, go on a little vacation, but also remember that you're a football player and his favorite term is make the main thing or something like that, or keep the main thing, which right. is you're a football player by trade. So almost every waking moment of your life is in pursuit of being the best football player you could be. So he is asking them whilst there is the police, which is the coaches, not around to watch you, can you perform on the same level or higher whilst no one is watching and come back to camp ready to go? You know, because there is an incredible amount of stuff that went into these, especially on offense, where this is a brand new offense and there's so much to learn. And Aaron Rodgers and our new offensive coordinator, they basically said that it was the foundation. They laid the foundation to learning the offense, and they're not into the meat and potatoes of it yet, which means you should have that foundation down when you come back from your how many, whatever amount of days it is that they're going to be out for. Dedicating themselves to that is the important part. And as anxious as we are as fans, I think most Jets fans are thinking, you know, stay healthy, don't get arrested, cause no trouble, and come back healthy so we could ball out.
Yeah, I'm still a little I'm on the fence about them not canceling the OTAs for this week.
And why is that, my friend?
Just exactly for what you just said. Like, there's still a lot more to learn and all that. And to give us an extra week, you know, to take that week away when we had an extra week to kind of learn more. Not that they were going to learn everything in a week anyway, but, you know, to learn the newer offense now, and we got new personnel, and it would have been, I think it would have been beneficial for us to practice another week. But I also respect the coaching, you know, a decision to say, all right, you know what, let's give these guys a week off. We're going to start a week early anyway. So I see both sides. So
fine.
Right. On the fence. That's why I'm like, I see it.
No, but I think it's okay to feel that way, because I don't think there is a way, incredibly black and white way to look at something like that when the process is not yours. If the process was yours and you were in charge, you would do A. right? That's fine to feel that way.
Yeah.
There is an incredibly talented coach and his cohorts that believe that B, option B, is a better way of doing it. That does not mean that they don't, they think that A is trash. They just think for the position, for the situation they're in right now, that B is the better way to go at this. It does not make their choice incredibly smart and, oh my goodness, I couldn't think about it. Mm-hmm. Nor does it make A the incredibly smart, you know, option. It just makes one of these options was one he chose. It's simple as that. I think people out here trying to make this decision the be all end all of things is like really short sighted in my opinion, and kind of paints, you know, in a deeper conversation the way society views things nowadays. It's either you're with me or you're not. Right. In everything too. In everything. You don't like rum raisin ice cream?
You know why?
You're a criminal.
No, you know why? Because it just takes it back to not the same old Jet conversation. Not that. Just the conversation of these guys have won nothing, right? The coaching staff, I mean, not the players. Forget about, I'm not talking about the players. I'm just talking about this team and the coaching staff. Like, they have more to prove than to say, yeah, we don't need an extra week of practice. So I understand that end, you know, the people that are on the side of saying, yeah, they should have practiced one more week because, listen, we got so much to prove. Just because we're good on paper doesn't mean nothing, right? But I also respect the other side. Like, these coaches, they know the players. Like, if they see it this past week and say, you know what, even with an extra week, we're going to be at this level. Like, we're not going to take a next step in the learning progression. So, you know what, let's just take the week off and we'll meet them so-and-so week. So I get that side too.
Right? I think what you just said is, I think it points out something of a kind of a dark side of being a Jet fan. If you pay attention to almost everything we do, one of the things that kind of comes out as a fan of this team or any team that has been losing as long as we have is that you operating under the impression that anything that seems negative or that is done by the team, the organization, the owner, it doesn't matter if it's the ball boy or the one of the secretaries or whatever, anything that could paint the team in any bad light or shift it even an inch away from where you think it should be going, right, that implicitly kills the dream. You know what I mean? Like, oh my goodness, yeah. That, you know, what are we to do? They're taking 3 days off. Which is basically what the Jets did. The final week wasn't going to be a 5-day, you know, training session. It would have been 3 training sessions, you know, and it would be a Monday, it would be a Wednesday, and it would be a Friday, and that would be it. Right. And my view of it is, again, not a pro or con. I don't view it that way. I think if I was Robert Saleh, I would take that under consideration, but I don't know if I would go as far as taking the 3 days off. My difference in thought is that the explanation from almost everybody went, there is a lot that was learned. And if they learned a lot and it was just the foundation, imagine how much information we're talking about. So you do not want to have your players operating on the information overload. You want them to play free. You want them to have fun. And you want them to don't. A lot of football is to stop thinking and just play. And if you're thinking on the football field, I think you lose. And I've heard pro football players say that and coaches say that for a long time. So I totally understand why they did it. And I don't think there's any negative connotation in any way of taking a week off at all. Again, does not mean if I was in the situation, I would do it. Not that I'm a coach or anything.
Right.
But I understand why they did it.
Yeah. No, but I also understand the other side of the argument. So that's why it's like, you know, I'm on the fence about, but at the end of the day, you got to trust the coaching staff and say, all right, they must have a good feel of this team and thinking, hey, you know what? Another week is not going to get us any higher than where we are right now. So we're good. You know, let's wait till we get that early week and we'll be good to go. So I get that. You know what I mean?
Yep.
That's all. Get it. I just, before we get into the news, we were going to get into some NFL news. I just wanted to make a quick, not announcement, but just to mention, I think everybody heard was former Jets kicker Jim Turner passed away. He was our kicker for the Super Bowl III team. He was with us for 7 years, 64 to 1970. Then he went on to play for Denver for 9 years. So he played for 16 years. He was a kicker for a lot of years. Had a, you know, pretty good career, two-time Pro Bowler, obviously Super Bowl champ with us, but he passed away at the age of 82. So thoughts and prayers to his family and friends. Just wanted to mention that. Let's get into some NFL news. I mean, we're hearing all this thing. All right, Dalvin Cook got released, and he's looking for closer to $10 million than the $5 million that some numbers are being thrown around. And on the other side, we see Saquon Barkley holding out after he got tagged for the money he wants. So the lot, and there's some still really good running backs out there as free agents, right?
Yes.
Ezekiel Elliott is still out there.
Yeah. Hunt is still out here from the former Browns. Yeah.
I'm amazed. I'm still amazed at some of these guys that are still available. I mean, mm-hmm. to me, it's crazy. Elliott, Cook, Leonard Fournette, Kareem Hunt, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mark Ingram, Rex Burhead. I know that. Listen, I'm not saying they're all stars, but you know what I mean.
They're pretty good. Yeah, they're decent
guys. And they're not old. Dalvin Cook is 27. Elliott, 27. Fournette, mm-hmm. 28. Kareem Hunt, mm-hmm. 27. Ingram's the older guy. He's 33. But you know what? In a RB2, you know, or three guy, yeah, you could still have him on your team. He's not going to be bad. So I find it very disrespectful to the running backs in the position. I think Saquon is kind of saying that in his comments and when he's talking. So what are your thoughts on this whole situation?
Well, if collusion was a thing, this would be it, no?
Yeah.
It seems like teams have come to some kind of consensus about running backs. Go young or not at all. Or, you know, or don't pay them, you know, don't pay older quarter running back. The unfortunately there's there's enough data backing up that they could throw on the table backing up their stance, you know, when they talk about the injury concerns of running backs, how many games they could actually play per season. There is a line here that could be drawn. No, my issue is that these guys, I think they're good enough to perform for most teams. I mean, Leonard Fournette is an NFL football player. And when I say it that way, I mean it as in, he's not a guy that you sit on the bench that won't perform. I know that he has lost a step. I know that he had some horrible performances, but he has shown the propensity to be a damn near elite running back when needed, no?
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
I think he's Kareem. Better in a shared system.
But yeah.
Than the guy, you know?
That's what it is now. There's no D guy anymore. There's almost There's almost not the guy that is gone. Teams have made it known that most running backs are gonna be running in a shared rotation type thing for most of their careers, even young guys. Name me the running back that's on the team that doesn't have a compatriot or a teammate or that is almost of his caliber on his team. There's nobody I could think of. There's no bell cow guy. There's no team has one. They basically have a guy and a guy. The other guy might be a few steps down from him, but he's not a bust or some kind of, you know, seventh round running back that you're giving a tryout to. No. You bring in a guy that you know that is, okay, he is more talented than most running backs. Then you bring in a guy that's like a few steps under him. He could ball, but he's not right there.
Right.
So you call two of your favorite plays for your guy who you would call the starter. And then you probably bring in the backup to play third down, which is incredibly important because this is a passing league. A lot of the times in pass reps, the running back with the better that could pass protect better and understand the offense or the protection better, you put him on the field. They pay those guys handsomely too.
Yeah. I think there's still, you know, main guys in the backfield. But I know what you're saying. Like, yeah, the guys are not getting 30 carries a game.
No, that's what I'm saying.
But a guy like Derrick Henry is going to get 20 to 25.
And this guy, right? He's not even in the conversation.
Right.
Josh he's not. Jacobs, he's
healthy, not. He could do it. Nick Chubb. All these guys could do it. Right.
But this is what I'm saying, Chris, right? The guys you just mentioned, specifically Chubb and Henry,
right?
They're the last of a dying breed.
Well, Barkley, Barkley and Cook are basically that.
And
too.
I was just about to say, Barkley and Cook just happened to be part of that same breed. The problem is, teams do not want to hang their heart, their hopes and dreams on a position that has, unfortunately, which they have a bunch of data to back it up, that are highly prone to injury. So if this guy is down, that means my offense is done. We could make a point that Barkley is right to want more money because he basically was the glue that stuck that offense together last year. Not only that offense, by the way, that whole team. Because we know for sure that a lot of those explosive plays where Daniel Jones dumped the ball off to Saquon Barkley made the difference in making that offense what it was last year and complete hot trash. So he is right to demand more because he was more to them. The problem is all of a sudden they believe that this guy is not worth a contract, that they could probably get that kind of talent off the side of the road,
right.
You know, and that is how, unfortunately, I know it sounds horrible, but that's how teams are treating running backs. And it's unfortunate because I think running backs are, teams are basically, teams are basically lining up without a Sam linebacker in nickel. You're telling me you can't, that's prime running territory, in my opinion, as an offense. So why would you throw away damn good running backs in a league where defenses are giving you every opportunity to run the ball? And I see teams actually not taking these opportunities and throwing the ball instead. That's crazy. I do not like the way they're going. No, I do not like the way the league is going when it comes to that. Unfortunately, there are teams which are the best teams in the NFL that know the what a quality running back means to an offense and an NFL team. And they basically go out of their way to keep as many as they can, i.e. the Philadelphia Eagles.
Right.
Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why they were so scary last year is because it didn't matter if it was 3rd and 1 or 3rd and 5 or 3rd and 8. If they wanted to run the ball, they would run it. And more often than not, they will get first down. That is a scary offense. And again, like I said, I think they should go back to respecting that position, because that, to me, it goes without saying that this is prime time for running backs. Let those guys be, man. Let them eat, because it's, you know, if you're gonna give me 6 men in the box, and what you bringing down, a safety to play the third linebacker, because you're in nickel formation, man, please tell me I'm not running the ball. I don't know. I can't wait to see what this all develops to. Because this is where these data analytics things go wrong, in my opinion, because it's like, it's football. You know, at some point we got to go back to what it is. You know, it's football. Right. You know, the data is an intricate part of what makes this kind of football, 2023 football, interesting. But what will never stop making football football is just the game itself, and lining up in HB dive and just cramming the ball down your opponent's throat, even when he doesn't want you to.
Right.
Is a beautiful thing. So I don't know.
Yeah. No, I hear what you're saying. It's I feel bad for these guys, because I don't feel that horrible for them, because they're still going to get paid a ridiculous amount of money. Right. But it's just like, I just feel like they're being disrespected in every way.
I agree.
You know, but it's crazy that guys like, as good as they are available right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Somebody's going to pay them. I believe so. Yeah, I believe that they're going to get paid. I highly doubt some of those guys are going to be sitting out all year. This is ridiculous.
And they're not like, and they're not that old. That's the thing.
No.
You know, like I said, they're like 27, 28 years old. Yeah. Yep. I could see Mark Ingram being a free agent, right? If you don't have a spot for a third running back or fourth running back in your, I get it. You know, you don't want to sign a 33-year-old running back with a lot of, you know, with a lot of wear on his tires. Right. So I get that. Elliot,
but a 27-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, I know Elliot's got a lot of wear and tear, right? But he's had a lot.
Yeah, he has a lot of carries. Yes, sir.
But imagine him being like your number two running back.
He has the interesting thing about his stats is that apparently his numbers has been slowly deteriorating for the last 3 or 4 years or something like that, according to. I want to say it was Skip Bayless that said it. And I think I saw corroborating evidence somewhere about his stats, basically, and not just his yards. I mean, his yards per carry, which is something that kind of, you know, I'm not saying it's the be all end all, but it points to an issue, a vision issue, where you kind of, as a running back, you kind of lost that thing that made you find a hole. Right. And I've heard a lot of experts, running game experts, talk about that maybe they start being a little too itchy, stop being as patient as they were, and because they know they've lost a step, so they're trying to be too fast. So there's a lot of things that go into that. But his numbers have been dwindling for a while now, so it's interesting that. The thing about Hunt to me is that Hunt is what he is. He was supposed to be a superstar running back, So this is what you get. You get explosion, which he still has, physicality, which he still has, third down badass, which he did in the for the Browns for how many years, to the point where it was like you could not tell, really. I mean, I don't want to go as far as saying you couldn't tell the difference, because Nick Chubb is an animal, and yeah, there's almost nobody in the league like him, except there is Derrick Henry. But anyway, but Hunt is not that far behind him. That's a scary thing to have. That's why the Browns would basically bludgeon most of their opponent. The only reason why they lose most of the time is, number one, the pass game over there is trash, and the quarterbacks have been trash. So I don't know, man. It's crazy. I this is one of those things that I want to see what happens in the future with the way the NFL kind of went. You know, they kind of followed the data, and they're all going in the same direction here. And I think it's wrong. I think running backs are important, incredibly important, actually.
What's your thoughts about bringing in a guy like Dalvin Cook
to the Jets?
Yeah, because I mean, we got the cap space. We got like $23-24 million in cap space, so we got enough space. So,
I think
bad idea.
I think in a vacuum it works. You see, this is my the way I look at things. If you look at the current team makeup, right? And if you're not paying attention to just what the game plan is for the offense, for Aaron Rodgers, if you're not looking for that, and you're just looking for what the team would need going forward on an offense, what would boost them up, I think Dalvin Cook is something that you would entertain. But if you look at it a little closer, I think, number one, money-wise, yes, we have the money, but that money is already allocated, in my opinion, with the incredible amount of money the Jets would have to give Quinnen Williams and the incredible amount of money they have to sign Aaron. They have to give Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
When you combine that two, plus whatever, you have to also keep some in the back pocket just in case you got to make some kind of move because you had some incredibly bad injury. This happens. We know. And we're Jets fans. We're intimately connected to injuries at the most inopportune times.
Yeah.
So for me, I wish that we lived in that world where we could add a player like that, because yes, I would love to see it. But the way things are going, I think, man, you know what? I'm on the fence like you.
There you go. I am too. Because yeah, because great. You know what? I would feel a lot better if I had, even if it's not Dalvin Cook, one of the other guys, because I'd feel a lot better with one of the established running backs backing up Breece Hall than Michael Carter, Zonovan Knight, and Abbott Kinanda. I mean, we like those guys. Don't get me wrong.
Yes.
I'm not saying
yes,
but we really don't know how they're going to be, especially if Breece Hall is not 100%.
And just to be fair, let's explain why we feel that way. Michael Carter, after his rookie season, which was incredibly promising, had an incredibly big letdown last year. We missed the he lost his vision, in my opinion. He lost his forcefulness of his play. He was a little bit more physical in his rookie year. That whole thing he developed last year, where he was kind of just dancing behind the line of scrimmage more often than not, is something that bothered me. And he just looked like he lost a step. So let's say he was dealing with some kind of foot injury and we didn't know. But still, that's a question mark. We don't know if we'll ever get back Michael Carter from his rookie year. That's number one. The other kid, Abana Kanda, he's a rookie. He's never played NFL football before. Incredibly promising player. But that's a question mark. You don't know what you would get from him. And again, Breece Hall, incredible first. How many games he played? Six?
Six, seven?
Six or eight. That's something like that.
It was, yeah.
Incredible start. Injury, horrible injury. And there's a history that shows that most running backs take at least the next year of their return to come to get back to themselves. So that's another question mark. So yes, insert a player that you know without the question mark that could give you, you know, stability at the position is something that we should entertain. But at what cost? This is the thing, because when because there's no addition without subtraction in this situation, in my opinion. So what are you subtracting? That's the question.
Right. Which
and exactly. What are you doing here? And and again, with the front office has a plan, the coaches staff has a plan. I want to trust that they have thought about this. And probably have been having multiple conversations in-house about this. And they've chosen to do whatever is best for the plan they have in place and for the team they believe they have.
Right.
We as fans, we could dream that we understand the inner workings of the New York Jets. Listen, hey, that's what we do. We're fanatics. But that doesn't make what our feelings are right. I'm feeling that they should. But if you know, to be impractical, you know, if it was based on your job over there, especially if you're thinking of all the other variables in there, man, with team chemistry and all this other stuff that as a coach you gotta take into account. It's not an easy decision and you might not want to kind of mess with what you got going. I don't know.
Right. Exactly. No, that's the big question mark there. All right. So let's before we get into, we were going to start the previewing the defensive side of the ball. We went over the offense the last couple of weeks. I wanted to ask you, what's your biggest, before we get into the defense, what's your biggest concern of the offense? Like, what's your biggest concern concerning the offense?
A slow start because of a lack of complete understanding of the offense. That's my concern. I think this offense will at some point go on a tear. I think building towards that time is probably the most important thing. Again, it goes back to what we were just talking about when it comes to the running backs. I think being able to run the ball early in the season is going to dictate where this offense goes. Basically, I think knowing that Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback will probably pull teams into lining up with a light box, trying to protect the back end of their defense from Aaron Rodgers slicing them up, right? Which would give you incredible opportunities to run the ball. So being able to do that with guys that are questionable is where I'm at, you know, where I'm worried. You know, if we can't establish and beat the crap out of teams for giving, you know, constantly lining up and giving us light boxes, in my opinion, if you can't punish teams into submission and having them to bring that you know, that safety down to play the run, and give Aaron Rodgers the space to throw the ball downfield and take advantage of the weapons that he has, that's what the season should start with, I think. And because of the question marks at the position of running back, and also you're talking about, is Joe Tippmann your center? If he is, this is his first time playing center in the NFL, and he's going to have growing pains. Is Tomlinson from when he was with the 49ers or Tomlinson last year. That was not good. Is our left tackle solidified? Is AVT back to his former self? All that stuff, in my opinion, is one big subject. And it's not different things. Because I think if that line is solidified, then being able to force the ball down the throats of people that are, or teams that are willing to give us light boxes whilst they try to stop Aaron Rodgers from slicing them apart will dictate what happens going forward for the team. So that my fear is that overall the team does not start quickly. They start slow because number one, because people are having an issue with the offense. They're not learning, or that the running backs and the offensive line is kind of, you know, taking a long time to develop in the system. So I don't know. Maybe it's more than one. And it's just in my head, but. Yeah, that's what I feel. I feel that's my concern.
My biggest concern is the offensive line, because right now, like, we don't know what the starting five is going to be of the offensive line. We could guess, right? We could assume it's going to be, you know, we think it's going to be Dwayne Brown at left tackle. Like, we think he's going to win it. Left guard, Tomlinson, center is up for grabs right now.
Yeah.
Then you got right guard, has to be AVT, mm-hmm. and then right tackle. You know, what's going to happen?
Question, like, Rank, right?
Right. Yeah. I think the tackles are, to me, tackle and center, right? Center, mm-hmm. it's going to be one of probably two guys, right? Tackle, for me, is the big question mark because, okay, if there's going to be a competition, a legit competition between Dwayne Brown and Beckton mm-hmm. at left tackle, mm-hmm. like, how long is that going to be, number one? How long is this competition going to be? Because if one of them loses, then the other one has to go compete for the right tackle position. Or are they just going to say, okay, you could be the right tackle? I think there's a pretty good right tackle we had there last year that was starting to play pretty well, right? Max Mitchell.
Yeah.
So I don't know. To me, I think it's going to be quick. I don't think it's going to be that long because I think you pointed out probably last year and even this year a little bit that moving from one side to the other is not exactly the easiest thing, right? To move from left tackle to right tackle. So let's assume for a second that Dwayne Brown wins this competition. And okay, now what do we do with Becton? Oh, okay. So you could go compete for the right tackle position. Now he's got to learn a new position basically and try to win that position.
And just not to cut off, but I saw proof that he had been taking snaps at right tackle in camp. So that means, in my opinion, that means that the team has made it pretty clear to him that that's where they want him. So, you know, I don't know if I like this, but I prefer them having a stern 1-2-3 view of this instead of kind of wavering and waiting to see who wins it. I think you should just start up with whatever the hell it is. Do your observation, your film, whatever the hell it is. Line up the guy that you think should be at that position. And then if during camp of those two guys, one outplays the other, you don't have a choice. You move them to the position. Right. But you do not make the players force your hand instead of you coming in with a maybe. To me, that doesn't make any kind of sense whatsoever. I think over the off season, the coaches have been sitting down and probably, you know, beating that dead horse a million times, talking about what they should do with the offensive line. I think a lot of they don't know who's where and who's supposed to be. I think it's a lot of coach speak because if I'm getting paid millions of dollars to do a job and I don't, I get paid way less than that. Mm-hmm. And I do not go to work every day without a plan in my mind of how to attack my day. Because to me, it would be stupid to do that. So imagine what it means to some to the coaches that coming into their offseason and they don't have an idea. No, they knew who is going to be where. Now, if somebody outplays that position to the point where they have to go back to the drawing board and be like, we might have to move this guy over here because the guy has performed that so admirably. That, in my opinion, is why you move guys. You do not move guys just because you think or just because, maybe you're going to come. No, no. You give Mekhi Becton the right. Brown the left, and then you just roll. And if Brown loses out to Becton, Becton wins the spot. Brown is the backup, and you get Mitchell.
All right.
You know, to play right if he's healthy and if he's earned it. You know, so I don't think that's far fetched in my opinion. So.
Yeah, no, to be honest, that to me makes the most sense because if Becton has to move to right, like if he loses this quote unquote competition, then he's got to learn that side. You know, he's got to get comfortable as a right tackle.
Yeah.
So you would think you would want him to do that from week one, you know, skip the competition and just say, listen, this is how it's going to be. Dwayne Brown, yep. He's a former multiple Pro Bowler at left tackle. This guy he's got a track record. He deserves the left tackle position. Becton, we appreciate all the hard work you've put in this offseason. It's great. You're in great shape. I love it. You know, you're in a different mindset. That's awesome. So go and win the right tackle position. And there's the other thing. Dwayne Brown, you're not going to switch him to right tackle
at
this stage of his career, right?
No,
the guy hasn't played right tackle in like 15 years. So
yeah.
That ain't happening. So... Yeah. Right. So you just move Becton to right tackle and, if anything, have a competition with Max Mitchell at right tackle. Because let's be honest, Becton still has to prove something.
Thank you very much.
He looks great. And, you know, he's posting all these Twitter photos that he's in great shape. And I love it. I think it's awesome. But he still has to prove it on the field.
Thank you very much.
Me and you could start hitting the gym and cut, you know, 20, 30 pounds off of us and start looking great and start posting pictures on Twitter. But at the end of the day, that means absolutely nothing. Right. I mean, they look great.
Football wise, that means nothing.
Right. Exactly.
We've heard football players say it all the time. What's football shape? They call it football shape. Yeah. It's different. So you could look good, but does that mean you're in football shape? And for Mekhi, it's not just about being in football shape. It's also being able to bring himself back to that rookie status. When he played that year, he looked incredibly promising. He looked like he could have been the Jets' left tackle for the foreseeable future. Now what he has to do is prove to the Jets that he could be a right tackle for the foreseeable future and maybe force their hand to the point where he has to be moved over to left tackle. You know, so it's about putting the best five on the field. And you put the positions up. Dwayne Brown right now is your best left tackle. Hands down.
Yep.
So you're not, in my opinion, moving him over unless somebody blow your mind. Like, incredibly, like, put him to shame. You know. Because this is Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback, man. You're not putting some if maybe... guy in that position, so that goes without saying, in my opinion.
Yeah,
but yeah, like I agree with everything you said, man. I think the offensive line is a big part of this. There's question marks here. Again, like I pointed out, even if we know Vera Tucker was so good, coming off an injury, we don't know who he's gonna be. We don't know. I know Connor McGovern was good, but he was not that good. I mean, a lot of the reasons why a lot of our quarterbacks would have pressure up in their laps during the season was because of him. he got pushed back incredibly way too often, in my opinion. And I'm not talking about just a couple steps, man. This dude was losing ground. Sheesh, it was bad at some point. And I think that's part of the reason why he got paid what he got paid. He basically got, what is it, like 1 point something million?
Yeah.
That's not starting center money in this NFL.
No.
That's why I think Tippmann is going to be the starter. Yeah. So there's just question marks here, question marks there. Nothing is set in stone. The excitement of Aaron Rodgers as our quarterback is not gone. But if you look deep enough, you could find chinks in this armor.
Of course.
And there's a lot. There's a lot to be put together still that hasn't been put together. And fortunately for us, there's time. So let's hope that this offseason, the continuation of this offseason, brings us finer, refined players. The reawakening of Tomlinson, the reawakening of Vera Tucker, the birth of Joe Tippmann as one of the premier centers in the NFL, the rebirth of Mekhi Becton, you know, that is what we would need to make the kinds of runs that we're dreaming of as Jets fans.
Yeah. I agree. Before we get into the defensive side, actually we got good news and bad news this week. This is the kind of week that reminds us that we are Jet fans. Good news is we found out we signed Amos, the safety from the Packers, who's very good.
Yes.
Hasn't missed a game, I think, in like 5 years. He hasn't missed a game since 2017. He's played every game since 2017.
Yeah. Something of an Iron Man. Yeah.
But there's always a but with the Jets. But we find out that Chuck Clark had a really bad knee injury, and we don't know the whole story yet, but things are leaking out, probably out for the season, ACL, whatever. So what's your thoughts on Amos replacing Chuck Clark, basically?
I like him as a player, but I think for what we were envisioning, or what I thought they were envisioning Clark to be, I think you get kind of a step down or a couple steps down from what Clark is. I think Clark's instinct and understanding of football is incredibly high, man. And if you watch the film on this guy, it's almost like he could read what offenses do before they do it. He's always around the football, constantly making plays. And that's why I think he felt disrespected when he went to the Ravens brass asking for a deal. And instead of getting a deal, he got shown the door. I think the reason why the Ravens did that is because they basically drafted his replacement. Forget the kid's name. Was it the draft last year they drafted him?
The kid from Notre Dame, right?
Thank you. Yeah, the safety. Yeah.
Yeah, when that they were talking about us getting him.
Yes. Yeah, and with his level of youth, speed, and athleticism, I would understand why you would want to go with the young player. But what Clark is, in my opinion, is one of those he is an unsung hero on an NFL defense. Yes, he does make a lot of plays, but a lot of what he does is understanding how to take offenses off of what they want to do by being so instinctive that you have to account for him. So that kind of instinctual play would change this Jets defense incredibly, in my opinion. And the fact that they've lost him for the season is heartbreaking in my opinion. Not just for me, for us as Jets fans, but for him, because this was a perfect situation to basically thumb his nose at the at Ravens brass by showing them, listen, this is what I could still do. You know, you don't, how dare you trade me away for a seventh round pick? I'm worth more than that. You know, so I feel bad, feel bad for him. And like you said, you know, you have these every season, man. We as a fan, you have these dreams and they get dashed even before they get started, and most likely because of injury.
Yeah. No, and just quickly, the Ravens got to remember the reason why they were okay with trading him is because they have Kyle Hamilton. That was the guy's name.
Right. That they just Hamilton, drafted. Right.
Yes. And they also picked up Marcus Williams from the Saints.
Thank you.
So,
yeah, exactly.
They're pretty set at safety.
Yes.
So what are your thoughts on Amos real quick?
I like him. I think he another player that kind of has really good instincts. Again, like you said, he doesn't miss a lot of games. People are talking about him being a free safety. I think he could line up there, and he has. I think our friend, I was looking for the numbers. Our friend Michael Narnia at Play Like a Jet. Play Like a Jet. Sorry, Scott. At Jet Sex Factor. had some numbers pertaining to his lineup. And it sounds something like that. He lined up in the box for 37.9% of his defensive snaps. That was 17th highest among 73 qualified safeties. And he lined up as a deep safety 45% of that time. And that ranks 42nd. So, you know, that's not a guy that's lined up deep a lot. I mean, he lines there, but that's not really his thing, you know.
Right.
So I think there's going to be a lot of moving parts in the defensive backfield for the Jets. That's what it looks like to me. So
I'm trying to.
So he plays in the box more often than not.
Yeah.
Then he plays deep. So I think they're going to ask him to, but I don't know if that's something they're going to do more of. I think, again, another player that is like a Chuck, he is very like Chuck Clark. I think his blitzing, his understanding of offenses and the kind of attitude of sticking his nose in the fan, like a fearless type player. I think he kind of brings the same attitude, but I think it's kind of a step down from what Clark is, in my opinion, anyway.
Right.
But being a free safety, I think that's not something that you would do him the disservice of doing too much of. I think he could do it once in a while, but that's not really his game per se.
Right.
By the way, thanks, Michael Narnia, for the numbers, man.
All right, so let's get into the. We'll start the defense with this episode. We'll get into the defensive line, tackles, and the edge. What are your thoughts quickly? They're talking about moving JFM inside and Michael Clemens, right? What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts on Clemens going inside is, oh my goodness, that's incredible in my opinion. It does two things to you. All that talk of does the Jets have enough beef inside goes away, because if you watch Clemens play, and our guy Luke Grant had a breakdown of Clemens's shenanigans on the defensive line. This dude is at what is it? What is he? He's weighing. He weighed last year about 270. He was pushing around 300 and something pound men like they were ragdolls. It's incredible how strong he is, and how he does not care. It's almost like they're not there, and that attitude and that bully attitude is what you need, and apparently he put on some pounds. So you take that guy with more pounds with that kind of strength, move him inside, because number one, I think his athleticism outside was about average. But if you take that kind of average athleticism and you put it inside against a guard and center, you get kind of a, you get the damn near great level of athleticism, because it's hard. The interior offensive linemen deal with quicker impact, but put in space like the Jets like to do to interior offensive linemen, where they run a lot of stunts and games. Having guys like that being able to run at them with space because they had to collapse inside or outside because of some kind of stunt, or Quinnen Williams basically taking them off their taking them out their shoes, is a problem. You know, so I think you basically end up having two JFMs when you have Clemens inside. Clemens and JFM could do the same thing. And you put those guys in there, and you put those guys in there together with guys like Will McDonald and Bryce Huff on the outside. Holy. This is incredible. So in my opinion, this is an awesome idea. I'm loving it.
And we did lose a couple of guys. We lost Sheldon Rankins and we lost Nathan Shepard, but they signed who did they sign? They signed
Al Woods
and Quentin Jefferson.
Yes. And Al Woods is basically that run stuffer that we hadn't had in a year.
Just that big body, right?
He's big. Yeah, about 309, 6'4". And I think he has a place in a third down pass rushing situation, because I think he's a little bit more agile than people give him credit for. I think he also he has a nice swim move. He could get in the backfield if he has to. It's just not his game. But he is known more as a run stuffer than he is. I think what's the other guy's name? Quentin Jefferson is probably the replacement for who you mentioned earlier that we lost.
Sheldon and
Nathan Sheldon Trump. Rankins. I think Quentin Jefferson is more of a Rankins clone than he is of any other player. I think he has that kind of athleticism, especially as a pass rusher. As a pass rusher, he has that three tech type, you know, the NFL modern three tech, where they're incredibly quick on their feet, good with their hands, able to penetrate really quickly. I think that's what makes him more like the guy we lost. But unfortunately, as a run stuffer, he leaves a lot to be desired. He gets pushed around a lot, man. You don't, in my opinion, you don't want this guy on first down on your team. he looked really bad last year.
Right.
When it comes to stopping the run. So I see him more of a rotational guy on third down on the passing downs. Woods, I think you could use him a little bit more freely. But again, you know, and I know that these guys are going to be on a rotation. They're not going to be spending that much time anywhere. They're going to play, like Robert Salas said, he's going to play at least 30 snaps here and there, depending on the game. So that's how it is.
And then, like you said, when those guys are on the inside, now you got on the outside, you got Jermaine Johnson, Will McDonald, Bryce Huff, and Carl Lawson.
Yes, sir.
Two years past now, his injury.
Yep.
So you know he's going to come back much stronger.
Yes, sir.
So I think our corners is definitely the strength, and also right here. I mean, this is it. This is our strength of our defense right here.
This is crazy, man. This is crazy.
It is.
This is the level of talent and athleticism and just pure bully power that these guys could get. And not only can they run through your chest, they could run around you. That's a problem. And the fact that they have that level of talent in waves is a problem. They are able to give you almost 100% on every rush because they do not have to stay in the game for too long. That's not good for you because you're going to get, on any given play, you're going to get a fresh Jermaine Johnson in front of you, or a fresh Bryce Huff, or a fresh Michael Clemens, or
right. Pick your poison,
fresh
basically.
Kyle Lawson. Man, listen, we've seen this before. You know, barring any stupid injuries, this is going to be a force to be reckoned with. There is not a lot of offensive lines in the NFL that could withstand that kind of pressure from these types of athletes and pro players. There's not a lot of it. And teams will have to find a way to try to beat them. At some point last year, trap runs was something that you saw a lot of teams try. They had a little bit of success, so teams tried it. I think I remember at some point in the Pittsburgh game, Pittsburgh started running trap. If I actually like could break it down to you off my head what a trap run is, I would, but it'll be a little difficult for me to do. Mm-hmm. But basically, what they're trying to do is use their strength, your strength against you. And since your strength is getting upfield, that's what a trap is. Basically, kind of creating a hole where you could run into, like allowing a defensive line or a defensive tackle to get upfield incredibly quickly and trap him and run into the space where he vacated. That's basically what a trap run is. That's to me the most basic I can come. I mean, it's more complicated than that, but that to me, that's the basic way to explain what it is. And it was, and I remember that I think the Steelers, I think, did it a couple of times. It looked really good, and they were able to do. And then the Jets weren't having any of that. They were like, "Nope." basically, the nope was Quinnen Williams going, "Yeah, what?" What are you trying to do? I'm number one. I'm not going where you want me to go. I'm going where I want to go. So that was about that. And that was the end of the trap run. But yeah, that's one of those things that teams do to negate teams that rush like the Jets do. There's other runs that they try to do. But again, being incredibly disciplined is a trait that Robert Saleh's defensive lines have always been. They're not the type of guys that, they're just trying to get upfield. And because they're incredibly smart. And when you least expect it, they will do something. And when you're trying to trap them, and they'll trap you. So, yes, the talent is incredible, but you also have to take into account the scheme. And the type of players we're talking about, they're all incredibly talented, smart players that, yes, will play with their hair on fire, but also understand what's happening in front of them. So that's what's going to make it even more incredible what the Jets have up on that line in every snap. So beware, teams, man. Beware, man, because if these guys stay healthy, I don't know.
This is probably one of the best units in all of football.
Oh yeah! Oh, easily. Hands down. They're up there. They're up there with the Eagles, in my opinion.
Yeah,
they're up there.
Yeah,
I mean the Eagles. You could the issue people will have with what I just said is the fact that the Eagles had so many sacks last year that they're far away the better team defensive line than anybody else. But I think one of the things that really played into the hands of the Eagles was that their offense put up points, so they had so much opportunities to rush, man. Like you're talking about, your team is 40-0 in a blink of an eye, and teams are trying to catch up, and you just happen to have some of the most athletic, beastly defensive linemen. Mm-hmm. What do you think is going to happen? It's a recipe for disaster. And in my opinion, it just worked out in their favor. The Jets, on the other hand, did not have that. They did not have that kind of offense. And they were almost never in the lead. So you could not see them. Now they have a chance to to kind of position themselves in that way where teams have to catch up with their offense and basically play bare bones offensive games just to try to catch up with the offense and exposing your midsection to Quinn and Williams. Good luck with that.
Yeah. So, all right. Anyway, that's going to start our preview for the defense. Next week, we'll hit probably one of two weak spots on our team, and that's the linebacker position. But hopefully, Sharman will give us some good news on that next week. But that'll be our show for this week. And take care, guys, and we'll definitely see you guys next week.
Yeah, have a good week, guys.